This is a HeadGum Podcast.
For over 100 years, Tryco has been the leader in innovation and ingenuity for everything wiper blades. Tryco was the first to mass produce wiper blades, and they have received numerous awards from vehicle manufacturers who trust Tryco to put the best product on their vehicles. One of their products, Tryco Neoformed, is designed to match your vehicle's exact connection. That means no guessing, no hassle, and no confusion while installing your blades. Not only are they easy to install, but they are high-quality beam blades built to beat any type of weather. Tryco Ultra Wiper Blades are American-made premium beam wiper blades that shine in any weather. These wiper blades also feature a unique design that converts wind force into extra pressure, allowing for maximum windshield contact. Go to wipers123.com and use promo code MIGHTY, M-I-G-H-T-Y, at checkout to receive $10 off your next order of $40 or more. These wiper blades can be found online at wipers123.com. Use promo code MIGHTY at checkout and receive $10 off your next order of $40 or more.
AG1,
what's up? I'm here to talk to you about AG1 Athletic Greens again. You know, it's important to me that the supplements I take are high quality, and that's why I've been taking AG1 for, what is it now, 4 years, 3.5 years or something like that? The thing I like about it is it's researched and developed by an in-house team of scientists, doctors, and nutritionists with decades of experience in their fields. So you know it ain't BS, it's AG. They are the real deal. I've been drinking it for so long. Quality for AG1 isn't a buzzword. They really push hard. Expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, rigorous testing. They got it all. At each step of the process, AG1 is going above and beyond. Now, what I like about them, first of all, you can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because it's an NSF certified for sport, which is like a rigorous independent quality. They've tested for over 950 contaminants, banned substances. The industry standard apparently is only testing for 10. Dude, it's 95 times as rigorous. And it's not complicated. It's so simple. It's just replacing health supplements like multivitamins, digestive aids, immune support, and just one simple scoop. It takes 60 seconds. You don't have to swallow a bunch of pills on an empty stomach. Boom. And as I always say, you get a little bit of water in there too. Get that day started. So with the water, and then for me, the prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support is probably the most important ingredient. I eat a pretty varied diet, so I get my nutrition from a lot of places, but I got to eat more fermented foods. But AG1 lets me have this prebiotics and probiotics first thing in the morning, take care of my digestive enzymes, which if you're a listener of the podcast, you know I need help with. All right. Look, I've partnered with AG1 for so long because they make a high quality product that I genuinely look forward to drinking every day. I chug down an AG1 maybe within 10 minutes of getting out of bed. It's the way I start my day every day, even on the road. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3 plus K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/mighty. That's DRINKAG, the number one, .com/MIGHTY. drinkag1.com/mighty.
What's up, shitheads? Welcome back to another episode of High and Mighty. It's me, your boy, the number one fuckboy.
The number one fuckboy. All you gotta do is trust me.
Standing 6'2", 285 pounds, hailing out of Long Island, New York. He's the number one fuckboy, Johnny G. Not joining me in the High and Mighty Studios this round is Arthur Gabris. He's distracted by my wife's current snacks. But joining me in the High and Mighty studio for the first time, I've been a longtime fan of this guy. We did a Comedy Bang Bang at Outside Lands together maybe 5 years ago, but we're back. This is the reunion no one asked for. From Dad's the Podcast, from Pen Pals, we got Rory Scovel.
Oh, shit. That's some goddamn monster energy drink.
There it is right there, man. Sign of the devil, brother.
When did boy become B-O-I?
I'm not sure.
When did everyone, and we've all decided that's just what it is now, and I type it, and I don't even know. I'm like, I bet I'm just typing something. I don't even know what I'm
typing. I bet you this is like weirdly offensive, or I'm like culturally appropriating something. I mean, definitely.
Yeah.
The first time I ever saw it was Big Boy from ASCAT. From OutKast.
From ASCAT, yeah.
I came up to an improv with Big Boy.
Andre 3000 and I took foundations together.
Me, Besser, Andre 3000. Holy shit. Yeah, we do say, I don't know. I started calling myself the fuckboy as a joke in like episode 8 of this, and now I'm on like episode 200 something,
It's the best.
I'm tied into it.
It's the best because also I don't even know. I don't know that anyone even knows what it means.
A long time ago, I had Cypher Sounds on my podcast, and I called myself a fuckboy. He's like, you know, that's the guy in prison who fucks everybody, right? And I was like,
even cooler.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, all right. And then, but now it's like used for just like it's like a douchebag or like a male asshole or of some sort. I don't fully understand.
I love it. I love it.
Thank you. I like to do that in intro because now, no matter what you do, you're not going to feel like you were embarrassed yourself on this podcast at all.
No matter what you do, you can't be the number one fuckboy.
You can't be the worst, most annoying person on this episode. By me being such an awful host of a podcast, I make all my guests look good.
I love it. God damn it.
Rory, thank you for doing this, man. I'm pumped.
Thanks for having me on. I have nothing but time. And I need connections in so many ways. I need to feel people. I need to see people. I need to talk to people.
This is my I'm horny for friendship. And I'm like, I am backed up on episodes of my podcast. But anytime someone's like, hey, you want to? I'm like, yes, I would love to talk to someone that isn't my wife for 1 hour. I don't care. You have no questions about what we're eating for dinner tonight? Then let's fucking talk. Yeah.
I mean, it's just you don't know when you're going to get on a stage again. You don't know what that stage is going to be. It's like like doing anything live in terms of like if anyone does like a live Zoom thing, not stand up. But like a live Zoom, you know, we'll do our podcast live sometimes, or if you do like an Instagram live with somebody, I walk away from those so fulfilled. Now I'm like, oh, I'm not
such
getting
a low
this
bar.
Drug I used to get.
I'll make a fucking neighbor crack up like while I'm outside walking past them. And I'll live off that juice for an hour. I'll be like, I crushed the driveway this afternoon.
You know what it is? It's my wife and I are watching that show alone. And dude, you see, when they catch one fish and they're like, I'm going to get to eat for a week, that's our comedy now.
Holy shit, Rory. I'm addicted to alone. I watched season 6 on Netflix and then went back and watched 1 through 5. And now I'm halfway through 7. I'm
it's
obsessed with that show.
Oh, I didn't know 7 was even an option.
Yeah, it's out now.
You're
on the
deep.
History Channel.
Dude, you're off menu. You're off menu.
I bought it on iTunes because I watched seasons 1 and 2 on history.com with commercials in browser.
Dude, forever ago, Madrigal was like, you got to see this show alone. My wife and I watched it. This is like 5 years ago or something. We put it up on demand was the way to like get access to it. And it was like, he's like, it's on the History Channel. It's weird that it's on the History Channel. We were obsessed. I told people, I was like, this is the greatest reality contest show anyone has ever done. I was like, you learn, and all you do is feel shitty about how dumb you are as a person who definitely will not survive in the wild.
Oh.
You want to know what they know, but you know you will never know it.
Watching a guy cry over, like you said, one single fish that he's been dying to get for like 8 days really puts in perspective when you're adding to cart on Postmates. I'm like, I'll get a fucking quesadilla too.
It changes your brain too. When they talk about calories, you're like, because we've heard calories our whole life. Growing up, you heard people say, high cholesterol, I got all that. We've never, ever once, as human beings in America, known what we were talking about. We would just say it. But the moment I watch Alone and they're like, so if I do a lot of work, I burn a lot of calories and I need a fish because a fish at least has this much calories and this is why a high fat diet is good. Watching Alone is when I was like, oh, I think now I understand digestion and what my body needs.
It's eye open. It really, and so a few things I love about this show.
no host, although season 7 has some like after show hosted by some guy with a fake Zoom garage background. No,
we should have that job.
Yes, if you're listening, if you're,
I just want to state, comics should have every after show.
Yes, always. You don't have to be an expert on survival to talk to survival experts.
But don't you want to get the questions through someone like us, who's like, we're willing to admit we're idiots. Some people aren't self-deprecating. Comics will fucking throw themselves under the bus and
be
honest.
There should be the softest city-based comics having to talk to these UConn freaks who are like, yeah, all my teeth fell out on day 80 and I was worried that I wouldn't be able to eat Wolverine meat anymore. And you're like, I am such a bitch. I like... I'm trying to meditate frequently.
The most
like,
alt comic.
And I don't mean alt comic 2020. I mean alt comic 06.
Yeah, we're talking Dimitri Martin with the fucking easel sitting in front of three guys who cut the head off a muskox.
If Dimitri Martin, by the way, I love Dimitri Martin. Martin was willing to sit and interview people for a live, it would be the great. I would love to be his Ed McMahon and interview people like, from a live.
Explaining a palindrome to like a guy who lives off the grid and doesn't even never even had a cell phone.
A guy who's been out in the woods for fucking 90 days and ate four fish.
The other great thing about this show is that it's not a show you can go on to try to become famous like a lot of other reality shows. So you have to, because of the survival element, it really cuts off any fucking fame chasers.
And honestly, this is a spoiler alert, but with this show, you don't need spoiler alerts, because right now, if I said something and you went back and watched it, you would forget what I said. You'd get also, so entrenched in the drama of the show.
I'm so obsessed with the show, I couldn't tell you one person's name except for the remotely attractive women. I know all them by heart.
The one dude, season 6, it's the Netflix one, the one dude who's like a former Marine, military dude, he's got the daughters at home, knows his shit. You could just tell he knows his shit. They dropped him in a pretty good place. He's like, beautiful sunrises and sunsets. There's no snow.
That's the humiliating
lake.
Shit when one person's like, oh, I had like, it's an old boot in the water.
They're like in the tundra. He's out there fucking basking in the sunlight. But that guy was like, you know, you win $500,000 if you win it, which is so insulting for what they go through. Yeah. And then he was like, I miss my kids. And I had this revelation of, you know, money comes and money goes. Who gives a shit? The things are important in life. And I was like, this is why this is the best show. Because anybody who has that revelation just won something more valuable than money. The perspective of how important relationships are.
Also, just the idea that every single person, when they talk about this money could actually do a lot, I would like to buy some land and live off of it. Every single person just wants remote land. And you're like, just give these people land for doing the show.
You know what I'd love to see? I'd love to see someone who's so good, they're just still out there. And they're like, look, you got to come. You won. And they're like, no, I'm going to stay. Wouldn't you love it if two people really win for like a year?
Yeah, and it's like, why are we still watching this show? Am I part of this problem now? Like,
producers are like, just give them both $500,000. We can definitely afford it.
We're gonna make 6 seasons out of this. Yeah. We'll move on to other topics eventually, but my favorite guy is in season 6, the kind of big, burly sweater guy who kind of looks like the Stranger Things dude, David Harbour. He's kind of like this big, and he's like,
Got kind of the faux hawk kind of thing.
No,
Barry,
I like that guy
hair.
Too. That the archer. Yeah, he was fun. I'm talking more about the guy who's kind of like hipstery, and he's like, I got myself a muskrat, and he's so excited about eating the muskrat. And then later on, he's sawing the log, and he's like, uh-oh. And then he has to leave because of insane muskrat diarrhea.
Yes, like, yes. He was the second one to go. He was like, I can't. And it sucks because he's a survivalist. That's his job.
I know. And he was eating the muskrat so cockily. Like, like, ooh, yeah, yummy muskrat. Tastes like a chicken wing. Got to get the tail in. And it looked so nasty. And you're like, I'm actually kind of glad you got sick, you fucking psycho.
Yeah, eating those fucking worms. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Season 7, a dude shoots an elk with a fucking... bow, and then it doesn't die, and he doesn't have any more arrows, but it is dying. He has to run over with a pocket knife and take stabs and run away from it, take a stab, run away from it till it eventually dies. I will say, trigger warning for animal people, that is the hardest thing about watching the show, is like once in a while they take a stick or a rock to a rabbit's head or a slit a squirrel's throat or something. That's you the hard stuff. But other than that, it's a fucking beautiful show.
You know, I stand against the fucking horrific agriculture of how we our meat industry. But you know, there is something when you see people hunting like that in nature, it doesn't feel the same. You don't watch that and you don't go, ah, the treatment of these animals. You look at it and you go, oh, these people fully respect and understand the circle of life that is hunting and gathering and killing it. Because I don't shoot guns. I haven't gone hunting. I couldn't tell you that I don't want to try those things. And right. I couldn't tell you if when I did it, I would cry and go, I hate this so much. You know what I mean? I actually don't know. But there is a part of me that, like, when I see someone legitimately shoot an animal with a bow and arrow that they are going to use every bit of and store the meat and all these things.
Boil the brains to try to get a couple of extra calories. Like,
and
I love
I'm just kind of like, I fully, you know, and if it offends people, it offends people. What can I say? I can only be me, but I really respect it. I'm like,
I think we need to see a guy cut a squirrel's head off so you just know that that is at some part in the food chain what's happening.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, if you're eating meat not brought to you by a big game hunter based in the Arctic, it's probably a machine cutting off thousands of heads of animals back to back to back.
Yes. Like, without but what we do know is that we could be eating some of these fucking L.A. squirrels. I'm going to set up some traps. I'm going to do a live, but very much in the city, fucking Eagle Rock.
Don't you think, though, and between this show, between Alone and the pandemic, I'm becoming, and I'm the most city beach kid, like never.
You're a fuck boy, dude. You're
a
city fuck
boy. I'm from Long Island. We don't even have woods on Long Island, really. And I fucking am ready to become like a camper survivalist guy. I've been getting some outdoors time and it's great. But now with Alone, I'm like inspired to be like, this is kind of like, and I'm also a childless 38-year-old man who's getting older. And I'm like, what am I doing with my life? And it's like, I feel happiness when I'm out. And I guess I'm talking about doing shrooms in the woods or whatever, but camping, AKA, like I'm so in that mindset now. Like that's all I want to do. And I blame the show. And it's like, usually I watch Chef's Table and then order $200 worth of fucking caviar or whatever.
Yes.
At least
and
now
then you're like,
I'm
like, who am I?
Who the fuck am I? Now I'm like, I need an axe in my house. Like, I need a good knife.
we are so cliche, but I defend it. We're cliche, I think, in a good way. We did what a lot of people did. We bought tons of camping stuff. Because we're like, you know what, we're gonna go camping, but I didn't buy a bunch of camping stuff. Like, oh, let's get camping stuff. That's what we do now. I got camping stuff because I was like, you know, the pandemic is making me realize it's something I always wanted to do, and I never did it as a kid. It wasn't introduced to me, and every time I've done it, I've loved it. And my brain was like, buy the fucking gear that you need and give that gift to your kid. Like, take your kid camping and give them
your
that. Your
parents never took you camping.
Went camping, and I never actually even went to a legitimate like camp. I always did like sports camp. I go to like basketball camp or soccer camp or whatever. And I want to be like, I want my kid to know, you know, my kid is 5. I want her at 7 years old. I want to be like, hey, go start the fire for the campsite and know she knows how to do it and she knows how to do it safely, because that is the most natural education we need to, we don't need to know how to do our fucking taxes. I mean, yes, we do, but ultimately we don't, you know what I mean?
Right. When the fucking rubber hits the road and the world is ending, your daughter starting a fire is going to be way more important than
her knowing how to shoot a bow and arrow, which I can't be the one to teach her. I don't fucking know.
Well, that's
but if she knew how to do it, I'd be like, you're going to be fine. You're going to be just fine. You're going to carry on the fucking DNA of Scoble.
If your daughter at 17 is like, Dad, I never want to do this again, you at least gave her that opportunity.
And
that
you know
road.
That she would know it. You're not going to forget that. It's going to be like in your mind, oh, I know how to survive. I'm in the woods. I know how to do it. You know, a buddy got this as a gift, and I kind of wish someone would give it to me. And if I have a birthday coming up or a holiday where you get a gift and people are like, well, what do you want? I just turned 40 in August and people are like, what do you want for your birthday? I never know the answer to that, even though I do want stuff. But as soon as someone says it, I don't know what I want. I can't, my mind goes blank.
Well, there's something about, and I think part of it is our industry where I'm uncomfortable asking for anything.
Of course.
Like, but if you're known as Rory likes camping, it's like, well, let's get him some camping shit.
Yes.
Like that's having so, hobbies is the move. It's like, I mean, you have a podcast called Dads. You're a dad now. For that's the dad thing. Is like, I think he likes bowling. It's like, get him a tie with bowling balls on it. Yeah.
But my buddy got as a gift to go take one of those survivalist classes.
Dude,
that's what we need to do.
That's what I.
Hold on, I gotta shut my door.
I leaked that information to my wife's friends because my wife said, let's get each other gifts this year for Christmas because we're not flying to New York.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah. And I leaked it to her friends. I'm like, I think I want survivalist courses as my gift.
Yes. Yeah. And go like learn that intense shit. You know, it all takes experience, but you know, if it was like, oh, it's a 2-day thing, you would come back with so much knowledge.
Oh, I have spent so much time filling my brain with stuff that has never come in handy.
Yes.
Like, thinking of you taking your daughter camping is like, I was a latchkey kid. My parents both worked, whatever. That's the generation. But I have bricks of like 8-hour bricks, like for weeks at a time of just Nintendo in the dark basement. It's like, if my dad took me camping one weekend, that memory would shine so bright in my life. It's like, I'm like, oh man, that would have been a fucking great thing to have done at some point. Now,
yeah. So
now I'm totally, and moving from New York to California definitely opens up your potential for camping too. Cause it's like now you can do it 9 or 10 months out of the year. There's way cooler places, way different, environments that you could go to and shit.
We've been going on websites. We had some booked before the fires really kind of changed everybody's plans. It was like smoke in that area, so we're closing. You're like, yeah, I'm not going to come anyways.
6 months of not being allowed to do anything but go outside, and 6 months in, outside is now off limits.
You're like, I know. Wait, no,
where am I allowed now? The only place
where
is in my house.
Go? You know, you feel so bad because it's like those fires are insane. There's smoke everywhere. You read about it all the time. This is what I hate about our news cycle is that even now we're sitting here. We're like, I don't know. It seems like the fires are kind of gone. And you know, there's still firefighters exhausted to the fucking bone.
I know. I'm
literally
like
fighting these fires. And we're like, well, I kind of forgot. No one was reporting it anymore.
Oh, dude. I'm like, well, now I can go running in my West Hollywood neighborhood because the smoke is gone. Meanwhile, there's like a family crying over like the ashes of their like ancestral home. I'm like, oh, and I'm like, now I can exercise outdoors again. Thank you. There's prisoners. Burning their forearm hair off trying to save a fucking huge field, and I'm going like, as soon as the smoke rises, then we'll be able to go to the beach again. I feel like such an asshole.
I know. My topic of golf, I feel like an asshole every time I go to play it, but it is a genuine addiction to doing something where when I'm doing it, I feel bad that I'm not home because it's a 4-hour, 5-hour engagement.
Well, I've been quoted as saying that I think that's why dads get into golf, because I feel like it's such a dad sport. Because then your wife's like, if you can't go drink in your friend's backyard for 4 hours on a Sunday and away from your family, but you could foreseeably go play golf with the boys, which is a sport, exercise, hobby kind of thing.
It's interesting what golf is, because you can get, you can have a cigar going. There's someone driving around with beer for sale that just drives the course, and you just buy booze and you get royally fucked up. It's social. You're playing with buddies and you're just having a laugh. And then, you know, you get to the 18th hole, you're fucking wasted. I mean, let's go in the clubhouse and drink more and eat shitty food and watch the game. It truly is like, it's so socially decadent that if you're a normal person that has any sense of guilt, anyone who lives their life without guilt, golf is so great for you. Every day you'll be like, I had the best fucking day ever.
Because that's the only draw. That's like, the main cons of golf would be probably buy-in of gear. But as we get older,
it's pricey.
I love talking about gear because that's such a, and I forgive me if I'm being so down gender norms or whatever, but it's such a older man thing is to find a hobby that has gear.
Whether I gotta say,
biking, golfing, camping,
golf
dudes.
Gear. I have so many pairs of golf shoes that I do not need. You need one.
You
pair.
Need one.
You need one pair for a long time. And I've got five as though I need options. Like I'm on tour and I need to wear something different each day of the tournament.
What's the turf like today? It's like same as it is every week, Rory, at the same golf course we play
at. Type of, what kind of grass is it? Would it matter what I say? Will that change your game?
If I tell you,
I don't even know
genus
grass.
And species. Does that help you at all?
I don't even know it anyways.
Yeah. Is it Kentucky blue?
It's so expensive. There's so much gear. There's so much. There's so many elements to it. You're also buying balls all the time.
Right. There's
not even know the world is going to drown in golf balls. That's how many. There's so many golf balls in this world.
I saw recently an invention like water soluble golf balls that are like made from fish food, and you could just like crank it into the water. Which sounds. I want to go to the beach with like a fucking mega bucket of that.
I
just
know.
Crank from the shoreline into the.
One time I played, did you ever do Sasquatch, the festival up in like north of Portland, like between Portland and Seattle?
No, I never did
At
that
the
one.
Gorge. They did a comedy music festival, and I can't remember. This is a long time ago I went to it, but they had a platform set up for any of the artists in the tournament, and they had those kind of balls on a tee, and you could just hit a driver out into the valley. Just hit a golf ball as hard as you can out into nature. And people are constantly like, you're sure these balls are okay? Into these natural environments, these ecosystems were
There's
destroyed.
There's just a fucking endangered bear with 1,000 bruises on it, lying
choked to death. Just, you killed a species that was trying to eat the ball.
Golf is one of those things that I'm so happy you wanted to talk about it, is I've never done it.
Yeah.
I've done driving range and mini golf. I've never even done pitch and putt.
Yeah.
But this pandemic has got me thinking about golfing because
people are changing.
Yeah. It is changing. And you we have the time, like talking about going camping and shit. It's slowed down a little bit. I'm a pretty busy comic. So I'm assuming someone like you who is successful is also a busy, like touring and shit. Like your time just evaporates. And
the
then when
breaks,
you come home,
I know.
You can't take a 5-day camping trip or after you've been on the road for 10 days. So it's like, now with things slowing down, also I'm like not that hot on touring right now. Like I don't want to fucking go. This is great.
I'm for sure not
right
going.
Now.
Yeah.
I'm not going for a while.
I'm not going anywhere. You know what's so crazy about it is I started playing it in right before college. I went out and played because I was like, a buddy was like, let's go play golf. And I had never played, but I played so many sports that I so arrogantly was like, oh, of course, I'll just play golf.
Right.
And I'll just be able to do it. And obviously I couldn't. And I was like, fuck this. Because you think you're going to swing and hit the ball. And when you don't, you feel so stupid and so dumb. And you do it over and over again. You go, all right, I'll hit it this time. And then you don't. And you're like, why am I not hitting it? People are like, you have no style. You have no clue you have no function. You're just trying to hit it.
Yeah, it's not like a wiffle ball. Like you're not throwing up like a tennis ball and just like stickball style. It's not the same. My friend Dan just the other day said something to the effect. It's like, someone's like, once I wasn't on the tee, someone's like, well, now you don't hit it so hard. And Dan's like, I don't know how to not swing fully. Like that's such a crazy thing to try to wrap your head around. It's like, how do you swing at 70%? That seems impossible to wrap your head around.
It seems insane. And also like how to do it. And that there's so many, like, so after I played that one time, I then played a little bit in college because guys I played on the soccer team with, they would go play. So I would go to like, you know, they play on Saturday or Sunday. I'd go get drunk and fucking get high and ride in the golf cart and I'd hit golf balls. And the only thing I remember is that I was never any good, but the guys would always be like, you have a really good swing, because I was just mimicking what I saw, like, you know, other people do, but I didn't know what I was doing.
You're dressed fully like Greg Norman.
I was trying to look as spiffy as possible, and they're like, you're awful, but you look the part. And then I kind of played, and then after college, I didn't play like forever, and then I went and did a pitch and putt with a buddy, and whatever happened, something happened. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it finally, the sports void that was now gone, because I played sports since I was 5, And those have been gone. The team sports have been gone. Stand-up is such a fucking lonely sport.
Dude, you're talking to an ex-jock, too. I play rugby once a year with, like, 40-year-old men. We travel somewhere to play just so I can, like, feel the team sports and also have something to look forward to, like something to exercise for. Like,
team sports are, I think it's, they're just, maybe you have to play it to understand. I don't know. But I think a lot of people don't understand that if you successfully play a sport, you probably started playing that sport at a young age. That becomes a part of your psyche. And then you grow up and eventually, like most of us, if you don't play in college, then you finished in high school. And if you play in college, you probably, most of us probably stopped after college.
Right.
And then after that,
even playing college sports
is
difficult. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But after that, it's like kind of over. And it's this thing in your life that is just suddenly gone because you're not going to go play professionally. Maybe you don't even want to, but it's still kind of this activity and this ritual and this camaraderie that is just suddenly gone. And it's so much a part of your brain. I mean, that's why, you know, I loved doing improv more than stand up. Cause after a good improv show, I would celebrate like we just won a fucking game. Yeah. I'd be like, I'm getting everybody a beer. We won. It's like, we won. What is he talking about?
We won. We didn't get broken up as an improv team. We won. We made $0.
Yeah, we won the game. We weren't even up against anyone. We were up against the crowd tonight.
And we fucking dominated. Wait, you're saying something? There's something about that void that hits in the post-college early 20s where you're like, and I was talking about this recently on a episode of my podcast about hobbies, where it's like, I feel like there's that early 20s, late teens lifestyle, college age or post-high school for people who didn't go to college. It's like where you throw everything away, and at least speaking from a heteronormative stance, but I'll open it up to everybody, all you want to do is get fucked up and fuck. It's like, and like, that's all that matters. And then you get to be in your mid to late 20s and kind of either have a partner nailed down or you're like, yeah, I get it. I know how to hook up with ladies. I'm having fun now. Then you're like, still feel empty. What am I missing? It's like, oh, I remember I played football like 3 months out of the year.
Right.
Hung out with 40 dudes that I do not do this anymore. And it's like, oh, I miss that. Now you're like, now I'm 35 trying to find team sports and shit where you're like, I guess,
and also it's just not the same. It's good and it does like help. I mean, I play pickup soccer all the time. I was playing pickup soccer like a decent amount, and that kind of filled that void a little bit. But I think for me, whatever clicked that one day that I went and played pitch and putt with a buddy, I think something went off in my head where I was like, you don't need anybody. You can play this sport. It is a game. It is a sport. There is something
you
to
can
compete, but also it's wildly social. So it's not like you're trying to really play a sport when everyone's like, what are you even doing? You can't go pro. You're not going to play college. Like, what are you doing? And you're like, oh, yeah, but you have a couple of beers. You have fun. And you can really, you're also just playing against yourself, really, whenever you go to play. You're just trying to beat your own score. Something went off in my head where I was like, all right, well, if I can't really have team sports in a extremely easily accessible way, then at least I have this sport to like go. And it just opened up to me for some reason. I used to hate it. I hated watching it. I didn't love playing it. I didn't love hitting a ball.
Here's my question. Do you enjoy watching it now?
I have ever since, I'm not even joking, ever since that day with my buddy, this is like spring of 2015, I have watched.
Oh, not even that long ago.
A little over 5 years. I have watched almost every tournament every weekend. And not like the whole thing, but it's on Thursday to Sunday, every tournament. And you just put it on and I have it on in the background nonstop. We have cable just so I can watch the Golf Channel.
Oh, dude.
I'm in so deep.
I get it, man. And do you think you like watching it now because you understand how difficult it is, what they're doing, or just you, it gives you a little bit of that golf runoff feel? I think it's probably both.
It's
obviously
it's a few things. One, it's I know I now have a great respect for how difficult what it is they're doing and how they're doing it. I now go, oh, it's not just hitting a ball. There's so much more to it. two, when the broadcasters are talking, I now kind of understand what they're saying and actually talking about.
That's so I'm like, definitely part of it.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you could watch hockey for a long time until you understand the blue line. You're probably not loving hockey.
Right.
Until
right.
someone explains how the blue line works, you're like, oh, now I get why people are doing what they're doing. Golf is kind of like that. When you finally fucking realize, I got to say, throughout the 90s, you know, when Tiger Woods, you know, late 90s and early 2000s, when Tiger Woods was just winning all the time, I didn't realize that that's not just something someone does. You know, my
right.
coming in to realize golf, I was like, oh yeah, Tiger won again. Okay. But only now do I realize, like, oh, that's actually insane. He was Michael Jordaning the sport.
Right. And then also, like, you have to know a little bit about basketball to understand how, like, which is maybe everyone has a little more general knowledge about basketball. So, you know, Michael Jordan is that much better than everyone. It's not just like, oh, that's a name I recognize.
Yeah,
so then when
right.
you understand golf, you're like, oh, Tiger Woods is dominating this sport at that level now.
Yes.
Yeah. That's
and
cool.
like winning all the time. And now you go, oh, I actually see how there's a lot of guys that like make a pretty good career. And you go back and you go, oh, how many tournaments did you win? They're like, oh, I won 3 tournaments. And you go, oh, Tiger is about to break the record and potentially win 83 tournaments.
There's like a dude who's like, I've been golfing for 20 years. I bring home about $1 million a year and I've won twice. And you're like, wait, what?
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
Yeah. And I'm great.
Yeah. He also, Jordan did this in so many ways too. But Tiger actually did make the sport go from the identity of rich old white men. And not that was the actual identity, but that was the stereotypical identity, because golf is such a, you know, it's not inclusive. It wasn't inclusive.
No, it's literally still, in
it's,
clubs.
It's changing. You're right.
It's mostly played behind the doors of a club, which is famously
right, exactly.
exclusive.
Yeah. It's becoming more and more inclusive thanks to someone like Tiger, but you know, he changed the sport. He gave it a different image. He made it. Here was this younger guy who was winning, who
on
was
top
also
of being,
black, which was not the, you know, that which was not the sport. Not that he was the first professional black golfer, but here he was, a kid who didn't grow up in a country club, who is suddenly dominating a sport that proudly exists inside country clubs, and showing all of these people around the world, oh, fuck, this guy came up from the path, this other path, and he is dominant.
Yeah.
And his name
is Tiger, and he was cooler than all the old farty dudes. And that's just like the energy you need for a sport like that, where it's like all of a sudden people are like, tell me more about Tiger Woods. Like,
that's why when you watch like Michael Jordan, too, you had any footage of him in the 80s. And not to say there weren't other players like this, but before Michael Jordan came along, basketball just kind of felt like, outside of the greats, like, you know, Magic Johnson and so many others, but basketball felt so like broad shoulder, boxy, blocky fundamentals. And then you saw Michael Jordan dribble and like pull up for a jump shot or go in for even just a layup, not even a dunk. And it was so fluid looking that it was the first time you're like, oh my God, it looks so beautifully graceful and badass in this form
and
of however he's doing it, you know?
And other people look like they're working and he looks like he's having fun.
Yes.
Like,
and he looks
on a
so
smallest
effortless.
Level, sticking your tongue out while you play is like just enough for a kid, a non-basketball playing kid in the 90s to be like, who the fuck is this dude?
Yeah.
He's the coolest. There's a reason why every kid in the world wanted to be like Mike and not like Pat. As a New York Knicks fan, I wasn't like, I want to be like Patrick Ewing. Call me Starks. No, everyone wanted
Give
to be
Jordan.
Give
me an undershirt and knee pads and let me box out. No, but no one's attracted to that.
Right. And so that's so true about Tiger, too. And it kind of cracked open golf for people. And maybe it was because of my age at the time that Tiger popped off, because I was in like my 20s probably. But part of it felt like now I knew way more people that were golfing once Tiger popped off, too. It's my grandpa was a golfer growing up. That's like all I knew is that he drove to Palm Beach for, you know, 2-week golf tournaments or whatever. And I was like, I didn't know anyone young. And then after Tiger Woods popped off, next thing you know, my friends are like, yeah, we're going golfing tonight. Or like, you know, oh, we're going, right. I got to go to sleep. We got to wake up early and drive to this golf course. I'm like, what? It's like, no, Gabrus, you'd love it, dude. We fucking roll blunts. We chug beers.
Like, that's the thing. It's a party.
The selling points that people use to sell golf never involve like, and it feels good when you hit a drive. Because they're like, that's not going to happen for 2 years of playing. Right. It feels like.
They're yeah. Like, oh yeah, don't when expect they hit a clean drive, you're like, I'll never be able to do that. Yeah, it's it's also yeah, it is such a it's a painful sport because it takes so much time to really learn it. You the only way to learn it, you kind of do have to become obsessed with it. And what's so bizarre, it's like it's a crazy obsession because you just like even right now, I just want to go hit a golf ball. It's just so. It's so.
Do you have like a putting green in your house or your yard?
I'm gonna get one of those mats. I used to have one, but I wore it out. I got to get a new mat because also just standing and putting is like, it's so peaceful and just feels so good.
It's a great while you're on a call. It's like I gotta call AT&T and fix our internet. It's like all right, well I'm gonna. Blast 40 putts while I do it.
Yeah. It's so I at one point I bought the net to just hit balls, and this is kind of funny. We lived in Silver Lake. In the backyard, I put up a net so I could just full on swing golf balls into this net, and it felt so good. And one time I hit the golf ball and it went over the net. I guess I was too far back. It went over the net. And we're talking about like imagine just hitting a golf ball from like the Silver Lake Reservoir just towards sunset and having no clue where that's going to land.
Sorry, like put up the for sale sign. Just move. Immediately move.
I just hit the ball and I was like, my brain immediately goes, there's no way anyone will ever know you did that. But let's take the net down and let's put everything in the garage for a couple days.
I'm going to take the dog for another walk, hon. Where are you're not trying to find that golf ball to see if you hurt anybody, are you?
I remember after I hit it, I stood completely still to wait to hear the shattering of glass or the scream of like someone losing their loved one.
Classic like 80s movie, tire screech, glass shatter, dog whimpering. Yes. You're like, what the fuck did I hit?
Yeah. Terrifying.
I'll tell you what, in this pandemic, treating yourself to a nice meal has really changed dynamics. Since I don't want to go dine indoors and I don't want to go dine outdoors because it feels even just as scary to me, I've been doing a lot of delivery. And thanks to DoorDash, they make it so easy. And that's the treat now. That's the new version of a nice, like for my anniversary, we ordered in as a nice treat to not have to prep our own dinner. With the help of DoorDash, it's so easy. You open the DoorDash app, choose what you want to eat, and the food, they'll leave it safely right outside your house. We have a little table out there. We're like, please leave our food there. They have over 300,000 partners in US, Puerto Rico, Canada, and Australia. You can support your local go-tos or go to like the national chains and fast casuals like Chipotle, Wendy's, and Cheesecake Factory. They're all on there. So many of your local restaurants are still open for delivery. Just use the DoorDash app, select your favorite restaurant, and the food will be left at your door. And DoorDash deliveries are contactless, so everything feels safe. So for a limited time, our listeners can get 25% off and zero delivery fees on their first order of $15 or more when you download the DoorDash app and enter code MIGHTY. That's 25% off up to a $10 value and zero delivery fees on your first order when you download the DoorDash app in the App Store and enter code MIGHTY. Don't forget, that's MIGHTY for 25% off your first order with a DoorDash. Subject to change. Terms apply. Everybody wants socks, okay? It's the gift that keeps on giving the whole year. The weather's getting a little warmer. You're going to want to get some getting a little cooler. You're going to want to keep those feet a little warmer. Socks make a wonderful stocking stuffer. The irony there is not lost on me. Some of you freaks even sleep in socks, okay? So this is the gift for you. And I will tell you this. The Darn Tough Vermont socks are so comfortable. They are itchless merino wool. They're comfortable. They're durable. They fit well, even on my thick cankle having body over here. Slip in, smell, blisters, binding holes. No, you get none of that with Darn Tough Vermont. They are breathable, wonderful, comfortable, stylish looking socks, owned and knit in USA. Something for everyone too. I got hiking socks and running socks, but there's also skiing and snowboarding, work, lifestyle, junior, athletic, trusted by the military, nurses, mail carriers, marathoners, hunters, teachers, and pretty much everyone else who's on their feet all day. Head to darntough, darntough.com/mighty to check them out. Buy two pairs and the shipping is free. That's darntough.com/mighty. Do you feel with this is something I'm also working with in therapy and in my own life, but do you feel that golfing makes you feel better in whatever way? Like it's not self-care is the wrong word, but like it's nice to not think about bits or failures or not getting callbacks. Cause I'm finding a lot of comedy was like your hobby for a while, then it becomes your job, yeah. And then it's not as fun even to do the things that aren't necessarily your job. You're like, yeah, jump in and do an improv show. It's not exactly what I do for a living, but it still feels like your job. And then the second you're like, I've been getting into, you know, long distance running or whatever you're into, it just feels so good for 4 hours on the course to not think about comedy or just like shut your brain off in that way, I think retroactively makes you a better, fuller person, comic, all that stuff.
I think so. I think none of us can be prepared for how much rejection actually exists in comedy. Specifically, you know, when you get on stage to start doing stand-up, you know, you're kind of awful, and then you do okay, you get some laughs, and you know, that whole process of from year zero to year whatever for everybody, let's just say 10, you know, you get better and then you're good and then you kind of know how to do it. And the rejection from stand-up comedy kind of dissipates. Sometimes you bomb, but you know how to do it gracefully. But no one tells you like, hey, and now you're going to go out for roles and now you're going to pitch ideas and
you're going to do something that isn't stand up at all. You've been training for 10 years and doing, hey, I know you've been working till 3 a.m. for 10 years. Now you're going to start waking up at 6 a.m. and repeating the same joke 1,000 times and hope your skill set matches up for some reason.
And you are going to hear no for 5 straight years, even for stuff that seems like such a shoo-in. You will not get that role. You will not get it. And you know, you do get lucky. You do get some stuff here and there, and the whole time you're still doing stand-up, so you live this life of going, oh man, it's heartbreaking because I kind of want this other thing, but at the same time, how could I possibly not be grateful for the fact that I still have a fun job and I have a fun life. And I gotta say, the thing that golf gave me when I really started to care about it and play it, a lot of people say golf is the closest like sport to like actually what life is. And I used to always be like, shut the fuck up. That's like something when, you know, when someone's like, it's wine o'clock, like the Target decorations.
It's like a throw pillow in a man cave.
You go to someone's like, house and they need you to know they drink a lot of wine because they're still sadly thinking it's very cool when you're like, everyone drinks wine. It's not, who cares?
Yeah, we come from generations of alcoholics. We just don't talk about it.
Yeah.
We don't have pride in our drinking. Talk to me when you're chugging beers in your garage in between conversations with your family.
By yourself. Yeah. Talk to me then. Yeah, when some people are like, golf is similar to life, you know, early on I was like, shut the fuck up. And then the more you play it, the more you do start to realize what people mean by that, because you will never ever go to play that game and play it perfectly. It is actually an impossibility to play it perfectly because there's so many variables and there's so much going on that you won't play it perfectly. And
it's 18 holes. Like it's like imagine if you're a football team, you have 18 downs. It's like anything can go wrong when you have that many swings at it.
and when you play those 18 holes, you're going to hit shots that you'll hit a bad shot, or your ball will go out of bounds and you're going to have to drop, and you're going to have to already know that when you finish this hole, you're not going to get the score on that hole that you wanted.
And now you're not going to get that score on the entire day.
You kind of know it. And yet
you have no choice but to take those bad moments. Yeah, you take those bad moments and you have no choice to go, if I don't let this slide off my back right now, I can't have fun the rest of the day. I won't be able to hit the next shot without fucking up. And sometimes I see dudes, including myself, you hit a bad tee shot, you start getting fucking pissed, you get to your ball, your next shot is shitty, now you're fucking pissed. You finish the hole super pissed, and you know if you would have just taken a second after that first bad shot, you maybe could have calmed down, reset your brain, let some things go. And so to that end, I do now look at things when I'm playing golf or even in my regular life, you know, something happens and I'm better now at just going, is that something to really hold on to? Let that go. Who cares? There's more if you just let that slide. And I mean like across the board. I'm one of those people that has interactions with people. I replay it in my head on the drive home and go, was I a dick? I wasn't trying to be a dick. I tried to make a funny joke. Dude, and now I think I came off as an asshole. Yeah.
You're like, I'm probably going to go home and like DM them about something separate just to get a feel for how. I'm like, oh, hey, thought of something. Remember, we were talking about this. You should check out this movie. Please respond that like nothing is wrong between us. It's like, what am I thinking here? And I'm not even like that mentally, but I can get myself in that headspace so easily.
I fucking hate how relatable that is. I hate that I know exactly what you're talking about.
You're like, I'm just going to soft text this like, hey, Rory, I know we were talking about golf today, but I thought you should check out this alone thing. And then be like, if Rory doesn't respond, he was mad at me at minute 40.
And I'm talking like 30 seconds. You're like, come on. Your phone's in your pocket. I know I typed you. messaging.
Golf being like life. Bear with me as a guy who's not that great at golf or life, but keep this analogy going. Something about literally the broad strokes where you're like, just get it somewhere near the opening drive is just like, I don't know. How about chicken? And then it's like, okay, now we're down there. It's like, all right, let's refine it. Do we want a little, you know? And that feels like life in a weird way to tackle life where you're like, okay, we've got 385 yards. There's some sand here, some trees here.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get it in the fucking hole. That's nearly impossible. If it does happen, I'm blessed. But let me just try to get it somewhere in that ball. It almost is like, this is a fun way to tackle like the creative mindset of like, okay, time to write a movie. You're like, what the fuck? 18 holes, so much. It's like, well, let's just take a big swing here. And then refine it. Okay, we got to do this 17 more times, and we finished a game of golf. Like,
you know what? Whenever anyone talks about being interested in golf, I try to tell them, I say to them, look, I don't know anything, all right? I'm very okay at golf. I'm very okay. I can hit a shot that makes you think I've played my whole life, and then the very next shot looks like I'm just playing for the first time. I am inside that spectrum.
Yes,
easily.
I have a bag of different golf shoes, but that does not mean I'm good at all.
I am crushing the fashion because it's all I know how to do. It's the only thing I have control over. But I tell people, anytime someone's like, well, if I'm interested, what should I do? I think we always, you know, people go to the driving range, they do all these things, and I try to tell people, if you really do want to get good at golf, you really are like, oh, I think I want to learn it because I think I maybe would play it for a long time, because you can play it till you're fucking 80.
That's the
God
other thing
willing.
About this sport too. It's like the sports I'm into are like football, rugby, swimming, surfing. It's like, I barely do it now at 38. It's like,
with golf, I tell people go, you know, borrow someone's or buy a putter that you like and get some golf balls. And almost everywhere you go, putting at any, you know, golf course is free. They have the putting green set up. You know, this is obviously non-pandemic times, but you can just go to the putting greens and putt for as long as you want. And I tell people, learn how to putt. Learn how to get good at putting. Learn how to get so good that the ball from any spot, you know you can two putt it. You can hit it twice and you will get it in the hole. Just know that you can do that. And then when you feel like you know how to putt, now back up 30 yards and get out a wedge and learn how to make sure that ball lands on the green, because
you can two putt it
when you get up there. So you got to just get it somewhere on the green, not near the hole. Sure, you're trying near the hole. And then if you're like, you know what, I'm actually pretty good at that. It's like, now start hitting the ball from 100 yards until you're back at the tee box And if you're back at the tee box and you're like, I'm actually hitting the ball pretty well, well, you're probably a pretty decent golfer and you'll probably really like it because you'll know how to do it all. But, you know, we always start from the tee box with the driver, which is the hardest club to hit, when right. we really should be starting at the green and just putting.
It's like getting into baseball and being like, all right, get in the batter's box and hit a curveball. And you're like, yeah, exactly. Why don't I throw the ball with a mitt on for a little bit?
Catch for a little bit. Yeah. Let's just not even a baseball. Let's just throw a tennis ball that's been cut open for a little bit. Right.
Slow it down. Let's pace ourselves here. That's, I like this. You saying golf is something you do to your 80 is a great reason to get into it before you turn 40. It's like just, I find that like a lot of these hobbies, these things that I have now that I make me feel good, that are self-care, mental health, like going to the beach or going for a long walk or exercising, you realize that it's a confluence of things. It's like, oh, it's good to be outside, to get fresh air, to not right. look at a computer screen.
Yes.
And then you like accidentally get a lot of that with golfing, like
yeah.
social time with friends. And for a dad or for a married person, it's like, it's nice for everyone to get away from each other for a
yeah.
little bit.
Yeah. You know, some people, and when I people say this all the time, and I don't even know why I care so much. I've done a full sales pitch to people about golf and the fashion of golf, because I come from a place of also having hated it right. so much that when people are like, I don't know, fuck golf, I'm like, I know what you mean. I know like, what I you it. Mean. I You're used right. to be you. I'm suddenly a fucking infomercial with people. But, you know, some people always say, I hear this all the time, where people are like, I don't know, golf is for fucking douchebags. And I'm like, you're not wrong, but there's no way you've ever played a pickup game with a guy, a basketball
one
game,
dude who
with
wasn't
a guy that
a
was going too fucking hard. And you're like, will you fucking, no one cares as much as you. That guy is in every sport at every sporting location. You're picking the four people you play with. So if you're like, golf is for douchebags, it's like, well, it's you and your friends. You're probably right. not going to run into anybody.
And zoom out a little further, bud, and everywhere you go, there's numerous douchebags.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's like, yes.
I find that's something we always talk about on Action Boys, is how some of the best things that we enjoy most are ruined by the other people that enjoy it.
Yes.
It's like
yes.
Comedy, movies, horror movie, comic books, like all these
Limp
things that
Bizkit,
you
Biscuit, remember? Yeah. We loved them.
Ah, oh, man, the fucking hot dog flavored water, dude. Then everyone came out and fucking liked, and all these assholes started talking about chocolate starfishes. And I was
A lot
furious.
Of people you didn't expect did get into Korn and Limp Bizkit in a way where you're like, oh, I did not see that coming.
Yeah, it was a weird thing where it like pierced several different styles of cult at the time when it came out, where it was like, oh, some skaters are listening to it. Oh, okay. My mom Some is blasting. Yeah.
Your mom's, it's on the radio. Oh, it's on the radio a lot. Okay.
Yeah, okay. This is kind of yeah. for everybody yeah. now?
Guys,
okay.
this music has some hateful elements to it if you really listen to it.
If we really read the lyrics, this might be.
This might not be radio safe.
Before we get out of here, Rory, if someone wanted to, you kind of gave some simple advice there, but like if someone was thinking about getting into golfing.
Yeah.
What, I mean, besides
it's not that, watching it. Don't there's a lot of people who go, yeah, I watched it. I just don't like it. There's no I don't really like watching the NBA, but I do love playing basketball. I played soccer from 5 to 23. I played it in college. I don't really like watching it. I like to play it. So if you ever have watched it and be like, I don't know, I fucking hate watching it. Do not in any way let that be any sort of a signifier
I
if
mean,
you think you would enjoy
football
it.
Who watches football and is like, I like this enough that I want to play it. Like there's football. No like that. That disconnect
yeah,
is insane.
Yeah, yeah. It's the other. Yeah, it's the opposite. Because football, you're like, I would never play this, but fuck, it's fun. We're barbecuing, we're having beers. People are passionate. Some people are passive. Yeah, I think with golf, if anyone is interested in it, you do. It isn't about going out and buying all these clubs, and it's not about buying all these outfits and spending all this money. To me, it is getting a putter, getting a pitching wedge, getting some balls that can be fucking used, and going to like pitch and putt places. And if you have a friend, and we all have a friend who likes golf a lot, that's the person to go out and play with. And I have friends who are not good at golf who will not take any fucking advice. And before I give them advice, I go, look, I know I'm not great, but I am noticing you do this one thing when you swing. And I honestly think if you stopped and you switched, this would happen. I take advice in golf from literally anybody. I will try what they said. I'll try it one time. So be an open-minded person. If someone gives you a tip, fucking try
it. Take the
note. You have, it's such a mental game. I told someone the other day, I was like, anytime I go out to the golf course, if I truly think I look fucking good in the clothes I'm wearing, I do play better. I play, I show, I'm like, I look like a pro. I'm going to fucking act like a bro.
Bro, that's got to be part of it because people love that shit. People are like, now that I got my ping visor on, I'm ready to fucking exactly. crank one off the fucking tee. That's so, so funny you said, sorry, that triggered something in my head. Now I'm like five thoughts away. Back it all the way back up to getting started. I think comedy, going something you said earlier about stand-up, that rejection is, I think, part of what allows you in 2015 to start doing something that you're bad at, but know that I don't have to be good at something to enjoy it, and I will eventually get better.
That's a great point.
I think that's what gives me the ability, like, I talk about this all the time, because I don't mind being the completely uninformed guy where someone's like, hey, you know, like, I'm a know-it-all, but I'm first one to be like, okay, you know more about golf than me, Rory. Run me through this. Like, before the pandemic, I was taking martial arts classes in a park with these like serious Jeet Kune Do dudes.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I want to do this. I'm just going to show up. And like my mom, my family, I told my family, I was talking to my family about this. They're like, you're like 37 and you just like show up to a karate class in a park and you're not, I'm like,
right,
the amount of bad gigs I've done, the amount of, and in this business where you're forced to kind of find your way around the Warner Brothers lot before you can get rejected or whatever.
Yes.
Like, you're so on your own and exposed all the time, where for me to walk into a park with a bunch of dudes I don't know who are hitting like fucking or sparring and shit, and for me to go, I'm here to take a Jeet Kune Do lesson.
Yeah.
You have to eat shit 20 times on stage before you're comfortable. I'm so okay with being bad at stuff in front of people from comedy that it's allowed me to enjoy these things where I'm like, I'm kind of scared of camping. And my friends are like, just come. We'll make sure you're okay.
Yeah.
I'm like,
we'll show you. Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll be bad at it. I have no qualms. I think some people have a hard time because they gain their status in whatever world they're in, whether it be, for our example, comedy, or for other people, I'm at my office, I'm an alpha or whatever. Now here, I don't want anyone to tell me what to do or ask how to do stuff. I totally understand that mindset, but I am so ready. I have rookie brain. I'm completely comfortable. And previous point that you said that I want to get out to is that team sports mentality, I think. So being bad at comedy helps us want to try new things because, you know, at the end there it's worthwhile and it's okay to be bad at shit. But I think team sports also kind of prepared you for meritocracy, which I don't think a lot of people in the entertainment business have. Like, we talk about how like, oh, so-and-so, but if you're not as good as the other guy at playing midfield, you don't play in that game.
Right.
That's just life.
That's right.
If you learn that you're this third best offensive tackle on your team, you're not playing unless something happens to those other two guys.
Right.
So until something happens to Gemberling and Ian Carmel, I'm fucking cool being the third guy. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's lost on a lot of people in entertainment where they're like, why does this person have it? I'm like, well, they're better than you. Like, I don't know how to say this. It is subjective, but people like them more. So you lose. Like, that's life. And I think being not good at sports my whole life really prepares you for that. And that's why just team sports in general, I think, are good for human beings, whether it becomes from cooperation or learning to not be the best.
Yeah. I think it creates this acceptance of at least, and obviously it's not for everybody because there's a lot of people that don't have that revelation and it's wildly depressing, but I think it's great when you do have that revelation of accepting your position and accepting your place. It doesn't mean that you're okay with it, you know, and it doesn't mean that you're not gonna fight to try
stay
to fucking
here forever.
Get you, you're trying to get fucking that first position, but to know it and to get it and understand it is a part of figuring out how you fit into a system. And only when you figure out where you fit in that system can you maybe change those factors to move around in that system. And I think that I learned that throughout team sports my entire life. You know, I throughout my college career, I never played a position I actually liked playing, but I really wanted to play. So where they put me on the field, I took it really seriously. And I was like, well, I want to fucking play in the game. Just because I don't want to play here, I'm going to do what I do. I am good at it, and I'm helping our team. And if at the end of the day we win a national championship, I'm not ever going to look back and go, yeah, but it wasn't in the position.
Yeah, exactly. I wish I was sweeper on that. I got the ring.
I would have enjoyed this ring way more had I played a different position.
Rory, you had me banging my desk when you were saying that, because that just made me think of something else. If you're not enjoying not starting on the team, then you're not really going to love starting either. Like, if the only way you want to play soccer is as a starter, then you're not going to... You got to enjoy the ride up. Like, if you're just like, as soon as I'm good at comedy, I'll like it. It's like, no, it helps you a lot if you don't hate it along the way, too. Yes. It's like, that's and such it's a so mindset bizarre. That only happens in sports, where it's like, I hate golf because I'm bad at it. I'm like, no, you got to like the journey, or else
and
you're
you
never going
to relate
like-
to this, too. As someone who did do those team sports, but also is in this world of being an entertainer and being a comedian, it is two sort of different brains. We're in that world of like soccer. I loved the fuck out of practice of trying to earn your position, and I fucking loved that someone wanted my position. When I was at practice, I loved that someone wanted my starting position, and that if I wanted it, I had to fucking show up, and I had to work my ass off.
It wasn't a given.
I love that. And then when you step into comedy, there are elements of that to maintain, but you have to look at it so differently, because now it's in a world of subjectivity where when you get on, you can't go, well, I should have fucking got more laughs, I was way funnier. It's like, only you believe that. it doesn't necessarily make it true. Whereas in sports, you know, sometimes it's undeniable where people stand.
You're that person is faster, a better defender, a blah blah blah, has a stronger
better. And then you go to shows and you're like, well, who knows? And it's like, well, there's all these variables that it's art. So I've seen a lot of guys who used to be athletes who get into stand up and it fucking eats at their mind that they maybe haven't excelled and they thought they should have. And you can just tell it's because they come from this other system and their brain didn't adjust to go, well, now you're in a more abstract system that doesn't necessarily have boundaries and it doesn't have rules. And the only rule is don't steal someone else's jokes, but you are allowed to do anything else that you want to do. And that's the only fucking rule. Yeah, and some people,
that's the craziest thing. What you're saying is like talking about soccer positions versus like stand up. It's like, it's not even soccer. It's like everyone could get on stage and play a completely different sport.
Yes.
And be like, Dimitri Martin does is different than Kurt Metzger, different than this person, that's different than this person, different than Stephen Lynch. And then you're like, they're all doing different sports on the same night, on the same stage.
Yeah.
And we're comparing them. It's like, it's a crazy world.
For me, who knows, maybe there's these sort of connections to golf in some ways, but with stand up, it really, I was like, the only way I can do this and not go crazy is to simplify it down to not seeing what everyone else is doing, but literally just putting it in categories of it's either funny or it's not funny. But the other element of it doesn't really matter, because the only thing that really matters is it's either entertaining and it's funny and engaging, or it's none of those things. And then you can't walk away going, oh, it was someone else's fault. And then the other element I put in it is you're either having fun or you're not having fun. And if you are having fun, it probably is funny, you know, because you can't totally tell. You're still like in your own head. There's sometimes I thought I crushed and I go back and listen to a tape and I was like, oh, I was okay.
Or the big thing for me is like, I only remember one moment from every show or set if it was a good moment, then I'm like, I crush, and it could be 59 minutes of shit eating around it, or vice versa. I could crush the whole time, but if this one joke I do and it doesn't land right, I'm like, I bombed, and my wife will be like, babe, I think people really liked it. Yeah. I was like, I only remember one, or vice versa. I walk out like a fucking king and no one is even talking to me outside. Yeah. We're all smoking and I'm just like walking to my car with no compliments. And you're like, oh yeah, okay.
No one's even saying bye. Yeah.
Thanks for doing the show. We're never doing it again.
That was it for us. Yeah, you do have to figure out those elements of it. And in a way, I think that's what golf is. When I go play golf, I don't go out there and go, I'm going to be a pro golfer. You have to go out there and just be like, well, what am I trying to get out of it? And what are the elements that say this was good or bad? And, you know, if you're out there and you're having a laugh and you're hitting a ball, you're not trying to go pro. So really it's like, well, did you ease some tension for 5 hours and have a lot of fun doing a thing, or did you not? And the reason I think golf is so addictive is because it is torturous and painful and it beats the shit out of you, and you walk away going, I had so much fucking fun and I was horrible.
I think that's part of the appeal of comedy too, right? There's like that weird survivor element of like, I can't believe I'm still doing this. People get destroyed by this. I'm destroyed by this. Yeah. And I refuse to give up. And that's just enough to keep you happy. Yeah. Right. It's like, this just keeps me going. I'm juiced off the idea of how awful this is.
Right. Exactly.
So you have a new podcast out. You want to talk a little bit about what you got going on?
I've got a podcast with comedian Daniel Van Kirk called Pen Pals.
Former guest of the podcast, DVK, big fan over here.
Love DVK. We've got a podcast called Pen Pals, which is super fun, and we do some live shows once a month if that interests anybody. And then I just started one with Ruthie Wyatt on Team Coco called Dads the Podcast, and we just interview dads and non-dads, and it exists in talking about parenting and stuff, but also we get wildly off the rails and, you know, we have a lot of guests who don't even have kids, and we just talk about relationships with their dads, and it's really fun as a dad to find out other people's perspectives of how they were raised or how they view raising kids or how they're changed by having kids or their parents or their relation with their parents. So it's all those things.
Oh, and that's wherever you're listening to this podcast, just open that fucking app up and download or subscribe.
Just search that shit, dude. Review, subscribe.
please, I'm hustling for my fucking dollars these days.
Leave a review, but a good one.
Please keep it positive. I can't handle it. I'm so fucking fragile. I fucking went 8 over par today. I'm falling apart.
Oh, 8 over par. I'd take that. Oh, I'd love that.
Oh, that's good. Then.
That's great. That's okay. Great for me.
I don't know anything. Well, Rory, thank you so much for doing this. Did you have anything else you want to plug? I kind of cut you off there.
No, I don't know. I'm just not even doing anything. So, oh, you know what? I have a show on YouTube, Comedy Central's YouTube channel called Robbie that I wish was on TV. Wish I had made a TV, but they put it on YouTube because Comedy Central is changing their brand. So
they're moving a lot away from comedy. It's hard to tell what their plan is.
They're getting away from it, but it's Anthony King was our showrunner. Anthony King, Sasheer Zamata's in it. Mary Holland's in it. Bo Bridges is in it. So it's fun. It was a fun show to make. So check it out.
I was a big fan of the show.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of yours and Anthony King, so when I saw that announcement, and then seeing Beau Bridges, and
That's so crazy.
That's so awesome. Well, check out Robbie on Comedy Central. I'm at Gabrus on all social media. I have another podcast called Action Boys, where we talk about classic action movies for longer than the runtime of their movies. That's on Patreon. But we have some free episodes to get you to wet the beak a little. And then I also have the Gino Lombardo Show, now on Stitcher Premium, a quote-unquote scripted show where I play a shock jock. Promo code Gino gets you 1 free month. Second season airing now. Rory Scovel, thank you so much for coming on High and Mighty. This is very exciting for me.
Thank you, man. That was fun.
Bye, shitheads.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.
In a part of the world
where there are no rules.
Holy shit.
Holy shit, guys. Holy I'm so pumped.
I definitely have not watched this since I rented it on VHS in 92.
Strangers united by the threat of death.
We got all the fucking major players. Seagal.
Vladimir Putin is a good man.
Arnold.
Here, come. Give it to me.
I need you to cream pie me now.
Stallone.
People are loving this movie.
It's got a lot of heart.
You're mentally irregular.
Now, somewhere, somehow,
body blow, body blow, body blow.
Someone's gonna pay.
I would fucking love for my wife to, like, see me rip a guy's throat out.
But they didn't count on one thing.
This movie's fucking insane.
It's how you know it's a good movie. You have to do almost all the work yourself to figure it out.
Oh, there's a fantasy component. Yeah. There's some sword fighting.
There's some lightning.
Bam, bam, bam. Bam, bam, bam. Bam, bam, bam.
There's a new game in town.
You wake up after a few years, and then you don't even know who you are anymore.
We're going to be making Terminators.
We're going to make a really great deal with the Xenomorphs.
What? I don't hate them, but I've been in a room.
Yes, I understand.
This is now the 20th ending of the movie.
I am Dark.
I'm your dad.
Action, boys. Boys will be boys.
Subscribe here for bonus content and more free stuff from behind the paywall. To get new episodes, become a patron at actionboys.biz.
Do it! Do it!
Come on! Do it now!